Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Good Wednesday morning. Vanessa Denha Garmo filling in for my dear sister, Teresa Tomeo, here on this fall afternoon, September 25th. I hope everyone is having a blessed morning. We have two guests joining us here today on Catholic Connection. We're going to be talking about Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work, 25 Practical Reasons to Reject the Doctrine of Bible Alone, with our guest on author Joel S. Peters will be joining us. Now, millions of Christians believe in the doctrine of Sola Scriptura, that the Bible is the sole rule of faith. Now, the Catholic Church rejects it as contrary to biblical teaching, Christian history, and common sense. But there's another problem with Sola Scriptura that doesn't get talked about as much. It's utterly impractical, says the author. So we'll be talking with him about the different kinds of takes on the debate over the authority of Scripture and Protestants' rejection of sacred Scripture, tradition rather. Using a conversational down-to-earth approach, Joel S. Peters leaves behind heady theology and to focus on the real-world implications of Protestantism's core doctrine. He covers new ground in the Sola Scriptura battle by appealing not primarily to the usual Bible passages or assertions from the church authorities, but a logical, historical facts and everyday human experience, using examples from the time of the earliest councils that gave us the canon of Scripture through the modern age of mass printed Bibles. He provides reality checks that test the assumptions of Sola Scriptura against the nuts and bolts of our everyday faith life. So we'll be talking with him this morning on Catholic Connection. And then also joining us here today is our own Dr. Matthew Bunsen will be joining us, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and is Senior Fellow of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology and author and co-author of more than 50 books. So we'll be talking with him about two topics here today. The first is an editorial in the National Catholic Register on Kamala Harris should reconsider her snub of the historic Catholic event. That's editorial. So basically, she is opting not to attend the Alfred E. Smith Memorial Foundation dinner. And so we'll be talking with Matthew Bunsen about that and the ramifications of that, what traditionally this dinner is all about. And presidential candidates have attended this for many years. In fact, she's the second presidential candidate to decline this invitation. It was Walter Mondale that also declined it in 1984. So we'll talk to Matthew Bunsen about that. And then we're also going to be talking to Dr. Matthew Bunsen about World Communication Day coming up in 2025. And I love this theme that Pope Francis has chosen, the theme for World Communication Day, that calls on people to share with gentleness the hope that is in our hearts, communication that creates the condition for dialogue. And having spent my entire adult life in the field of communication, this is really important to me. I love World Communication Day and this theme because we have lost the art of communicating. We have lost the art of finding common ground. And I've, as a reporter, I've covered all kinds of stories, including politics. I've never seen in my entire life such political divide. The inability to have conversations on critical issues without fighting. And it's like one punch after another. And you see this in social media. And I love the fact that the Vatican addresses the issue of the social media platforms that has really incited this constant fighting and bickering and not having critical conversations with love and charity and centered on Christ. The Holy See Press Office released the theme Pope Francis has chosen for the Church's 59th World Communication Day in 2025. Share with gentleness the hope that is in your hearts. And the introductory text accompanying the theme notes that the topic aims to bring attention to the fact that in today's world, too often communication is violent, aimed at striking and not establishing the condition for dialogue. This is so true. The calls for the efforts to disarm communication to cleanse it of aggression. I mean, I post something with facts and data on social media, and it's like one punch after another. People don't want to have a dialogue. They just want to attack you and demean you and criticize you and name call. I mean, this is not a Christian approach to communication, and it's not going to solve any of our problems or try to find common ground. And that comes from the devil. The devil loves to divide us. It is Jesus Christ that wants to unite us in a Christ-centered way to communicate. And we have to have these conversations. These are very critical issues. We have to be able to, there's so many people that don't even want to see the facts and the data. And from a psychological standpoint, they call that, there's a dissonance. You know, there's this disconnect with people because they can't accept believing something that they didn't want to believe. It's like they want to hold on to their beliefs, whether it's true or not. And so there's a disconnect within them. So we have to find a way to bring Christ back into that conversation and share truth with love and charity. So the theme description notes that the prevailing standard seems to be that the competition, opposition, and domination, as can be seen in television talk shows to verbal wars on social media. It's so true. It adds that for Christians, hope is a person and he is Christ, and that this hope is tied to community. And since when we speak of Christian hope, we cannot disregard a community that lives a message of Jesus in such a credible way as to give a glimpse of the hope that it brings and is capable of communicating the hope of Christ with deeds and words even today. And this is from the Vatican News. World Communication Day is usually celebrated on the Sunday before Pentecost. Pope Paul VI established the day in 1967 in the wake of the Second Vatican Council as an annual celebration that encourages reflecting on the opportunities and challenges that the media offer and how the church can better communicate the gospel message. This is such an important conversation to be having on communication and how we as Christians can bring Christ back into our conversations. This should not be monologue attacks. This is about a dialogue from a Christian perspective. And so I'm really looking forward to talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about this as well. It is 8 minutes past the hour, approaching 8 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. And now it's time for the news. Getting an overview of the forecast around the country here in my home state of Michigan and the Detroit area. We have cloudy skies, a high of 71 degrees, and rain showers expected. Rain showers in Kansas City, a high of 74. Rapid City, 80 degrees. In Denver, 78 and sunny. And Albuquerque, 86 and sunny. In El Paso, 94 and sunny. San Antonio, 93 and cloudy skies. And then we look more on the west coast of Los Angeles, a high of 83 degrees and sunny skies. San Francisco, partly cloudy, 75 degrees. In Seattle, cloudy and 77 degrees. And if we look at the East Coast, Washington, rain showers are expected throughout the day, a high of 69. Buffalo, New York, a high of 67 degrees and rain showers. In New York City itself, a high of 70 and cloudy skies. Charlotte, North Carolina, high of 83 degrees. And Jacksonville, Florida, high of 89 and cloudy, rainy in Tampa, and in Miami, it's a high of 88 degrees. Thousands of Florida residents are being ordered to evacuate ahead of Tropical Storm Helene. The storm is expected to become a hurricane today and would be the fourth hurricane to make landfall in the U.S. when it hits Florida's Gulf Coast, probably late Thursday. Forecasters say Helene could make landfall in Florida's Big Bend region as a Category 3 hurricane as it intensifies over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. A hurricane warning has been issued for parts of Florida's Gulf Coast, and evacuations began Tuesday for some coastal areas. Up to 15 feet of storm surge is possible in Florida's Big Bend area. Ryan Ruth is officially being charged with the attempted assassination of a major presidential candidate, Mark Mayfield reports.
CNN reports prosecutors filed the charges Tuesday afternoon. Ruth allegedly camped outside of Trump's West Palm Beach golf course for hours, armed with a rifle earlier this month. On Monday, the Justice Department revealed a letter written by Ruth addressed to The World, which said this was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump, but I failed you. Ruth also faces multiple gun-related charges. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A Senate report finds the Secret Service is facing numerous problems keeping it from doing its job effectively. The 94-page report out today finds that a number of failures in security, planning, and communication directly contributed to the July assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump at a Pennsylvania rally. The report specifically cited a lack of chain of command, poor coordination with local law enforcement, and inadequate resources. Trump is expected to revisit the site of the attempted assassination on his life in a rally scheduled for October 5th. Security is increased at a Brooklyn school after a student was shot outside the school. Here's Scott Pringle.
A 15-year-old boy is recovering in the hospital after being shot in the leg. This was during dismissal time just outside of South Shore High School in Canarsie Tuesday afternoon. The student started running away after he was shot but then collapsed. Police are looking for the shooter. It's unclear what led to the violence.
President Biden says he believes the world is another inflection point. He gave his final address to the United Nations General Assembly Tuesday as tensions continue to rise in the Middle East. Biden called it for diplomatic solutions, adding full-scale war in the region is not in anybody's interest. This comes as Lebanese officials said more than 500 people were killed in Israeli airstrikes on the country Monday. It also, as the U.S. continues to try to help broker a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. Border Patrol says Mexican drug cartels are using kids to smuggle drugs into the U.S. Bree Tennis with more.
Special Operations Supervisor Eric Levine says his agents have seen a disturbing trend of middle and high school kids being used as mules to transport drugs across the border. He says the kids are being told they won't get in trouble because they're underage. Law enforcement says that's not true. Drug smuggling is a felony arrest that will follow you for life. San Diego DA Summer Steffens' office says they charged 26 minors with drug smuggling in 2022. More than 30 have been charged so far this year. I'm Bree Tennis.
The Department of Justice is suing Visa over alleged antitrust violations. Visa is accused by the DOJ and Attorney General Merrick Garland of monopolizing debit markets.
Visa has unlawfully amassed the power to extract fees that far exceed what it could charge in a competitive market. Merchants and banks pass along those costs to consumers, either by raising prices or reducing quality or service.
Prosecutors say Visa controls debit network markets by using agreements with merchants, card issuers, and competitors. Garland said Visa's unlawful conduct affects not just the price of one thing, but the price of nearly everything. The DOJ said over 60% of U.S. debit transactions run on Visa's network, with Visa ranking in more than $7 billion processing fees each year. Former President Donald Trump is talking about his plans for the economy in Savannah, Georgia. More from Mark Mayfield.
On Tuesday, Trump told his supporters he wants to take other countries' jobs.
We'll create millions and millions of jobs, massively raise wages for American workers, and make the United States into a manufacturing powerhouse like it used to be many years ago.
Trump said he'll unlock the energy potential in the U.S. by allowing for more drilling and fracking. He also said he'll keep the U.S. auto industry strong by putting a 100% tariff on every car manufactured in Mexico. Meanwhile, reports say that Vice President Kamala Harris will talk more about her economic plans during a visit to Pittsburgh on Wednesday afternoon. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Today is National Lobster Day. The day recognizes not only lobster's status as a prized delicacy all over the world, but the hard work and dedication of those who catch 120 million pounds of it each year in the U.S. It's 13 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. I'm Vanessa Dunn-Hagarmo, filling in for Teresa Tamio. We got to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
This October 8th, our sponsor, Spirit Juice Studios, presents The Full Story of a Hero, narrated by Jonathan Rumi.
Father Flanagan lived his life by a simple principle, that we are all children of God, and it is our responsibility to care for one another.
Heart of a Servant, The Father Flanagan Story, rated PG-13. tickets and info at FatherFlanaganFilm.com. That's FatherFlanaganFilm.com. Exclusively in theaters nationwide, October 8th.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heart-sick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sin. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Millions of non-Catholic Christians believe in the doctrine of Sola Scriptura, that the Bible is the sole rule of faith. The Catholic Church rejects that as a contrary to biblical teaching, Christian history, and common sense. And to talk with us about that and his book, Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work, 25 Practical Reasons to Reject the Doctrine of Bible Alone, is Joel Peters. Joel, thank you so much for joining us here on Catholic Connection.
It's great to be here this morning. Thank you.
So, Joel, tell us what inspired you to write this book at this time. And there have been other books written about Sola Scriptura. Why your approach as well?
If I can summarize this, it actually began many years ago in a youth ministry setting where, as a youth minister, I used to just make trifold brochures on a whole range of topics. And this just happened to be one, but I found out it didn't fit, certainly, in that format. I eventually expanded it to a booklet, and that was a number of years ago. And I figured after all this time, I feel that I knew the material a lot better, and it was just time to do a major revamp, a major rewrite of what I had done previously.
So what are you hoping, Joel, the readers will take away from this book? And you do take a different approach in terms of a more kind of conversational approach to Sola Scriptura.
I'm really hoping that minimally it does, it generates conversation. And perhaps for our Catholic readers or listeners, they might say, okay, I'm a little bit better informed on the topic. And for our Protestant brothers and sisters, maybe to give them an opportunity to seriously reflect on one of their core doctrines and to assess whether or not it's valid. Hmm.
So for Peter, Joel, for people who are not understanding how Protestants took this approach of Bible alone, can you kind of give us a background of what you include in the book? How did we get here, you know, where the Christian faith takes a much different look at faith than the Catholic Christians do?
Fair enough. It is a somewhat complex history, but I'll give the summary at least. Martin Luther, when he came along, the poor soul suffered from scrupulosity, which is a fancy word meaning he was always concerned about whether or not he was going to be saved, etc. And I firmly believe that in his angst over the issue, he realized that the church was calling him to perform good works as evidence of his faith. They're coupled together, and he couldn't, so he had a problem. And I believe he solved his problem by basically saying, well, I'm just going to reject the source of authority that tells me I need to do these things. And, of course, that was the Pope, the Magisterium, et cetera. And it just made it kind of, if I could say, convenient for him.
Mm. And so, you know, I've had these conversations with fellow Protestant, you know, with Protestant brothers and sisters, you know, like friends of mine. And in fact, I had a really good friend of mine who left the Catholic faith many years ago, and he started to challenge me and on these issues and pointing to Martin Luther and saying that he was correct in believing that it's Bible alone. Can the book be used as a tool to have these fruitful conversations with our Protestant friends about the teachings of the Catholic Church, to arm us with information that we can share with them?
I believe a resounding yes. The whole, my approach, so there are a lot of good books out there written by some really great people. If you start slinging scripture verses back and forth, you may not get anywhere. Well, you say, I say, and so on. So
yeah.
Part of the genesis to the book was the idea that, well, look, let's take it out of that so we're not just slinging verses back and forth. Let's approach it from the point of view of, does this work in practice? For something to be a rule of faith that governs the lives of millions and millions and millions of believers, you would think it would be accessible, it would make sense, etc. And I believe from that point of view, it really doesn't. So I've taken the argument out of the let's throw Bible verses back and forth, and I put it in a different ballpark, so to speak, where we talk about it from a logical basis, historical basis, and a practical basis.
You know, I love that, too, because that's where you get the argument will never end. And, you know, when you start arguing on Bible verses alone, the interpretations are different. I remember a couple of Bible verses he threw at me. I'm like, really? That's how you're interpreting that?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So you could.
Where did that come from, right?
Yeah. I was like, wait, there's no way that's the interpretation is correct. You know, and so we'd go back and forth and there was no resolve, right? There's no resolution. And we just agreed to disagree. You talk about 25 practical reasons to reject the doctrine of Bible alone. Can we go through some of those practical reasons, just kind of give our listeners a little bit of an overview?
Sure.
Okay, so why don't you, we'll just start going through a couple of them. Give us one practical reason that you share in the book.
Well, some of them are a little more historical in nature. Let's go with the canon, the official list of books that belong in the Bible. That list wasn't established until very far into the existence of the church at about the turn of the fourth century. If you can't identify the books that belong in the Bible, and if you can't do so infallibly, that is, there's no possibility of mistake, then how can it possibly serve as a rule of faith when mm-hmm. you can't even determine, well, what are the boundaries, what are the parameters?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Protestants have taken out how many books from the Bible, from the Catholic Bible?
Seven
yeah.
from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons, one of the things they took out, and I remember having this argument, Joel, is on purgatory, because they took out books of Maccabees and
yep.
and other areas of the Bible where they reference purgatory. You also talk in the book, so we're talking about, I'm looking at part one of the book, and the first Christians, tell us about the first Christians not having a Bible.
Well, when Jesus ascended back to heaven, it's not like he left his ship without a rudder, so to speak, without a motor, without a whole bunch of things. Jesus established a teaching authority to govern the lives of believers from that point forward. And the fact that even if you reflect on the fact that all of the New Testament wasn't even written until towards the latter part of the first century. Okay, the church has been around for 50, 60, 70 years. What has been serving as its rule of faith? And of course, Catholics would say, well, that's easy. It was the apostles who spoke and decided with Jesus' authority. We see in Acts 1 the account of the replacement of Judas with Matthias. So clearly, the office of these leaders, these successors, of course, we know as the bishops, but the office was meant to continue because the church was meant to continue through time. So Catholics don't have the issue because from day one, we have always had a very immediate rule of faith, and that is the teaching authority or the magisterium of the church. And of course, magisterium bases beliefs and doctrines on what Scripture says, but the magisterium has always been in place.
Mm. We're talking today with Joel S. Peters, author of Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work, 25 Practical Reasons to Reject the Doctrine of Bible Alone. We'll have this in the EWTN Religious Catalog. And so also in the book in part one, you talk about the reasons, and you mentioned the canon of the Bible was not settled until the 4th century, and the early church linked scriptural and magisterial authority. Can you kind of give us an overview of those?
Right. So we go back to, okay, the Bible. Well, what books does the Bible consist of? So if the canon wasn't really settled until the turn of the 4th century, now we're talking a good 350 years, give or take, of a time frame that we couldn't definitively say, well, the Bible consists of these books. So I think for Protestant brothers and sisters, it only makes the problem even larger. Okay, so it's not just until the New Testament was written, it's until we identify which books belong in it. So for those 350 years, what happened?
Yep.
I think it's inconceivable that Jesus would have left his bride without leadership.
We got to take a break. We're talking with Joel Peters, Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work. We'll be right back to continue the conversation after the break.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. What does this strange beatitude mean? Well, Father Victor Feltz points out that George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life embodies this beatitude. He has to sacrifice his bucket list items and his dreams in order to save the building and loan company of Bedford Falls. But by the end of the movie, he realizes that he's truly the richest man in town. The Beatitudes challenge our understanding of happiness both as individuals and as a society. They're paradoxical and they upend our priorities. We don't need anyone to tell us that good fortune, money, and success do often make us happy. But we wouldn't have thought that the road to riches in God's kingdom is paved with meekness. It doesn't mean denying your gifts, but it does challenge us to allow others to have the spotlight and to approach them with gentleness. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Is it impossible to live Jesus Christ's command that the marriage bond be indissoluble? No, says the Catholic Catechism. The Lord has not placed too heavy a burden on the shoulders of a married couple. By coming to restore the order of creation disturbed by sin, Christ himself gives the strength and grace to live marriage in the new dimension of the reign of God. By following Christ, renouncing themselves, and taking up their crosses, spouses will be able to receive the original meaning of marriage and live it with the help of Christ. St. Paul, in a letter to the Ephesians, emphasizes this when he admonishes men to love their wives as Christ loved the church. For this reason, Paul says, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
And we're talking about Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work, 25 Practical Reasons to Reject the Doctrine of Bible Alone with the author Joel S. Peters joining us here on Catholic Connection. Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tamio. And several chapters in the book. I just want to address a couple more here, Joel. So we talk about the biblical manuscripts contain many thousands of variants. Why is that important to mention in this book?
Well, the reality is that if these variants exist, one has to be sure that you're dealing with what the author originally wrote and not some corruption of it. Now, just to be clear, I think we have very good reasons to be confident that the biblical text it's not like a game of telephone where it's become totally corrupt. But in those cases where, okay, this manuscript reads this way, that one reads that way, how do we know which of the two to go with? Well, sometimes if all you're dealing with is a biblical text, that can be a difficult question to answer. But if you have a teaching authority established by Christ, and whose living memory can say, well, we know what the answer to that question is, you are in a much better position, I believe.
You know, and that ties into both chapters 15 and 16 in your book. For a long time, Bibles were beyond most people's means, and it took a long time to make a Bible. So talk about that.
They were phenomenally expensive. They were really well beyond the means of most people. Typically, universities might have owned one or something like that, but and also the time frame. Now, depending upon which source you consult, to hand copy a Bible, anywhere from 12 to 15 months. So I go back to, look, let's just talk in very practical terms. If this is supposed to be our rule of faith, but it can't be disseminated in any meaningful way, then how can it serve as a rule of faith?
And then sola scriptura also depends on people's ability to read, and understanding the Bible is more involves more than just reading the text.
Absolutely. Let's just go back to the assumption that people can read. In my experience, I think what happens a lot is we take a lot of our current perspectives and assumptions, et cetera, and we kind of project them back to 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, the ability to read, and I find that often these assumptions are really not well-founded at all. So once again, you just have a very practical reason why people can't really access the sacred text. But there's always the magisterium. The magisterium has walked with us every step of the way for two millennia, so Catholics don't need to be concerned with these issues.
And we're talking about sola scriptura doesn't work with the author Joel S. Peter, published by Catholic Answers, 25 Practical Reasons to Reject the Doctrine of Bible Alone. And when we have this discussion about Protestantism and Martin Luther, you know, I could see this book being a really cool a book club read and Bible discussion, you know? I mean, this could be the focal point of having a really fruitful conversation with our Protestant brothers and sisters in the faith. Was the intention to have this as a foundation of a really good, fruitful conversation?
Absolutely. I was very purposeful about including questions for discussion, reflection, pretty much at the end of each reading for that very purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Can we sit down and discuss this further?
Yeah, and to have fruitful conversations in ways that we've lost that art, I think, in so many ways, Joel, to have a conversation in a loving and charitable way about these issues. Are you hoping in any way that this book will lead people to the Catholic faith?
I think the easy answer is yes. Certainly, as a lifelong Catholic, I believe that the Catholic Church is the one founded by Christ. It does speak with his authority, etc. The fullness of everything we need, truth, the sacraments, etc., not surprisingly, is found there. So if I love someone, and the theological definition of love is to will good for another, certainly I would hope, I would want, I would choose that people who are not perhaps on board with all of the Catholic Church teachers might eventually come to understand those teachings and say, hey, you know what? I want what you folks have.
I want to go back to reason one in the book, Joel, and you talk about Protestants, just to kind of elaborate a little bit more on this. Protestants cannot agree on a definition of sola scriptura. Can you explain that to us more in depth?
Sure. I think I have five different examples of Protestants, and I picked notable people, not these obscure people, so people that would have been respected within the Protestant community. So is it the only rule of faith? Is it the only infallible rule of faith? Some of them say, well, it's a rule of faith, but it's meant to operate in concert with other sources of information, lesser authorities, etc. So I go back to the fundamental issue of, okay, if it's a rule of faith, and even you folks cannot agree on how to define that or what the parameters of that rule of faith are, isn't that a fundamental problem?
Yeah, so who's right? Which one's right?
Exactly. And you get back to the whole bit with slinging verses back and forth. I believe it's the same kind of a dynamic. My definition is right. No, mine is right, and so on. And that really is not helpful. It doesn't get us anywhere.
Yeah, and so if sola scriptura is clearly taught in the Bible, why don't all Protestants agree on the definition? I mean, that seems a logical question, you know.
Agreed.
So which decides the theological truths in scripture are essential or vital then? Who gave the person or group the authority to make such determinations?
Well, see, we go back to an authority that was empowered by Christ can clearly answer that question, but I find in my experience in researching the book, et cetera, that when you start with Luther's premise that I'm at liberty to interpret scripture however I see fit to do so, to me, it's not much of a stretch or a leap that people get to a point where they make other decisions on their own authority. Well, like this very issue, well, I'll decide what's vital and what's not. And I would bet anything that not all Protestants would agree on whatever list that person generates. So again, now what? Do we just continue to go through the centuries saying, my list is right, no, my list is right, and so on?
Yeah, it's a never-ending debate.
It really?
Yeah, it's a never-ending debate. We're talking about sola scriptura doesn't work. With the author, 25 Practical Reasons to Reject the Doctrine of Bible Alone. We have about a minute left with you here, Joel Peters. What else do you want our listeners to know about this book published by Catholic Answers Press?
Someone in my parish had read it and commented and said, it's an easy read. And I thought, you know what, I take that as a compliment. It's meant to be accessible. It's meant to be not heady, not theologically complicated, et cetera. So I really do think it's accessible to pretty much anyone out there.
Thank you so much. And in addition to be available, Joe, through the publisher, it's also available at the EWTN Religious Catalog. So thank you for being with us here on Catholic Connection and sharing this with us.
Thanks so much, Vanessa.
God bless you and all that you do. Joel Peters here with us on Catholic Connection. We have to take a break. When we come back, our own Dr. Matthew Bunsen will be talking with us, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We'll be right back after this.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
He's not on drugs. Parents will come into my office and describe a litany of trouble about this long. Then they'll say this, I'm giving you the wrong impression. Overall, he's a pretty good kid. How so? Well, he's not on drugs or anything like that. One of the new moral high bars out there, he's not on drugs. You want to raise a child not with the absence of pathology, but with the presence of virtue. She's miserable with me, but she treats everybody else great. Again, not the absence of bad behavior, but the presence of good behavior. He's not on drugs? It's a rationale. May provide some comfort. It's not a path to virtue.
He is the the vice president and editorial director of EWTN News and a senior fellow of the St. Paul's Center of Biblical Theology and the author and co-author of more than 50 books. And he's here on Catholic Connection to talk with us about a couple stories, including our vice president, Kamala Harris, is going to be snubbing a historic Catholic event. Matthew Bunsen, thank you so much for joining us here on Catholic Connection.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Very good editorial in the National Catholic Register on this issue. Yeah. Let's talk about your take on the Alfred E. Smith Memorial Foundation dinner that Vice President Harris is opting not to attend.
Well, I think Cardinal Dolan of the Archbishop of New York, who's the host of the dinner itself, whoever is the sitting Archbishop of New York is always the host of this. I think he said it well, that this hasn't happened in 40 years, and everyone's a little confused trying to figure out why this has happened. And I think he was very gracious about it. He did, with his customary marvelous sense of humor, point out that the last time somebody did this was Walter Mondale in 1984, and he lost 49 out of 50 states.
Yeah.
Again, it's just the very sort of delicate humor of the Archbishop of New York, being a Cardinal Dolan. But I think he's making a point that really, since this is a dinner that was started in 1945, immediately following the death, the passing of Al Smith, who is Alfred E. Smith, was a legend in Catholic political life and really American political life too. The Democratic nominee in 1928, who was beaten by Herbert Hoover in part because he was Catholic, and he was a great governor. But at the same time, he faced anti-Catholicism. So this dinner has been an opportunity to celebrate his legacy. And since 1960, pretty much every year, you have the tradition. It's a very important tradition that, as I think it was Theodore H. White made the observation, that this is, quote, a ritual of American politics. There are all kinds of reasons that you'd want to go. The first time that we had two candidates, John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon in 1960. And since then, for the most part, there have been a few peculiar situations. Like I think in 2006, you had, or 1996, you had a few candidates who didn't show, but that was for very specific reasons. But the last time there was a no-show, somebody who declined, was Walter Mondale. So you have to go back 40 years for that to have happened.
Yeah. And there, like you mentioned, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, there's many reasons to attend. What is there a thought process on her reason not to attend?
It's unclear. Now, the official campaign statement, the reason has been given certainly by her representatives in the media, was that she's too busy campaigning. Mm. Now, let's remember that in previous years, you have an audience of 10 million around the country who will watch this thing. So if you're looking for an opportunity to reach a very sizable audience, this is a perfect opportunity. It's also a chance to interact with two groups that I think you really want to as a presidential candidate. The first is people who just want to see a human side to the candidates. Everything's very programmatic typically in a campaign. So this is an opportunity to be spontaneous, to have fun, to poke fun at each other. Now, famously in 2016, Donald Trump took a baseball bat rhetorically to Hillary Clinton. But at the same time, he did display certain forms of humor that a lot of people didn't really anticipate. The gold standard for that, people like Mitt Romney and George W. Bush, who seemed at times very stiff, but used this as an opportunity to humanize themselves, to project warmth and humor. The second group, though, that I think this is why the Register considers it something of a missed opportunity for the vice president, is what everyone thinks of how fragmented or potentially fragmented the Catholic vote is, it is still a sizable player in American politics. And in very, very tight races, as we saw in 2016, it can make the difference between winning or losing some of these key battleground states like Pennsylvania, for example.
And Michigan.
in Michigan.
Yeah, our my own state. And I think that's a really valid point. In fact, research shows that whoever, you know, ends up winning the Catholic vote usually wins the presidency. And, you know, my thought on that, too, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, is that if we were all properly catechized, it wouldn't be an issue anymore because you would just be voting for policies and politicians that are more in line with our Catholic faith. It wouldn't be such a challenge to win over votes, but
we've done some polling, as we always do, at ABC News and our partnership with Real Clear Opinion Research, and certainly to your point, we're finding Catholics are all over the map at this point.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, that the Catholic vote is still something you really need to gain.
Yes.
You need to try to nail that down for your campaign.
Yeah.
And especially blue-collar Catholic workers, as well as the Latino vote, which, based on some evidence that we're starting to see, the vice president is apparently having some trouble connecting with the Latino voters. Now, among Catholics, for example, we still have a very, very significant gender gap. But it really is in her best interest to try to cultivate this Catholic audience. And why she's choosing not to do this is anybody's guess, beyond, again, as I said, the campaign saying that she simply is too busy to do this.
Or, you know, you can come up with your own opinions. Maybe she doesn't want to be roasted by President Trump, you know, and to show that human side, I love how the lead of this editorial from the National Catholic Register, I just want to read a couple paragraphs here. A campaign can require a lot of wardrobe changes. A tuxedo Mitt Romney remarked at the Alfred E. Smith Memorial Foundation dinner in 2012. Blue jeans in the morning, perhaps, suits for a lunch fundraiser, a sport coat for dinner. But it's nice to finally relax and to wear what Ann and I wear around the house, the 2012 Republican presidential nominee quipped, which I quickly laughed at. The audience, composed of leaders in business, media, and politics, roared in laughter. Romney had been pilloried by his opponent, President Barack Obama, as a callous and corporatist throughout the grueling campaign. But this was, you know, his opportunity to kind of be self-deprecating. And it was funny. You know, that was a funny joke. So this is
right.
Showing the human side of a candidate. So
now, there is a sensitivity to certain issues. I think we've seen issues. I think in 1996, Al Gore and Jack Kemp were sent to the dinners in part because there was a controversy at the time. And tell me if this sounds eerily familiar. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton had just vetoed a bill that would have ended late term abortions, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there are occasions where political reality, especially from the Catholic standpoint, does have to weigh in.
Yeah.
But for an open invitation like this to be turned down isn't unprecedented, but it is highly unusual. And again, as our editorial at the Register points out, it's something that you don't need to do. I mean, you can really enjoy this opportunity to connect directly. Now, whether the vice president is comfortable with the sort of extemporaneous atmosphere. We know that this is a campaign that so far, at least, has rigidly adhered to a minimum number of spontaneous interviews, the most recent being on Oprah Winfrey that was judged to have been less than successful for the vice president. But also the sort of spontaneous nature of things that are without a teleprompter on the campaign trail. Those are also very rare. So it's possible that we could be seeing some concern on the part of her campaign to put her in this sort of an environment. But certainly, politically, the risks are significantly outweighed by the potential benefits.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Maybe she just feels totally out of her element. So it's 48 minutes past the hour here. We got to take a break with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. We want to come back and talk about World Communication Day. So stay with us, Dr. Bunsen, and stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back after this.
How would you like to celebrate the Divine Mercy at the Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Poland on Divine Mercy Sunday? Well, you can. Steve Ray here, inviting you to join us in Poland. As we follow the footprints of John Paul II, Maria Faustina, and Maximilian Kolbe, daily mass at the most iconic, beautiful churches and delicious local foods. Join us in April for Divine Mercy Sunday in Poland.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
This October 8th, our sponsor, Spirit Juice Studios, presents the full story of a hero, narrated by Jonathan Rumi.
Father Flanagan lived his life by a simple principle, that we are all children of God, and it is our responsibility to care for one another.
Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story, rated PG-13. Tickets and info at fatherflanaganfilm.com. That's fatherflanaganfilm.com. Exclusively in theaters nationwide, October 8th.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
We're back here on Catholic Connection. Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for my dear sister in Christ, Teresa Tamio, this morning, talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Switching gears a little bit here, Dr. Bunsen talking about Vatican News and the theme for World Communication Day 2025, calling for gentleness. What's your thought on the Pope's choosing of this theme?
Well, I think it's very consistent with Pope Francis in the sense that he has called, and this is one of my favorite phrases of his, for a revolution in tenderness. Mm. And certainly from the standpoint of the Christian, we always go back to the early church, see the Christians, how they love one another. And I think for Francis to choose this as his theme, especially from you know, 1 Peter, share with gentleness the hope that is in your hearts. Mm. And it is this idea of communication. But when we look at it, you hat-tipped it. You tipped it very nicely about the problems that we have today in social media.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond social media now. It inevitably, this sort of behavior... Social media gives you the opportunity to be somewhat anonymous, to be faceless, and that often leads to the worst types of verbal behavior.
Sure.
Now we're seeing that bleed out in the very streets where people no longer feel any sense of restraint from acting out on their worst impulses in person, too.
Yeah. So the theme description notes that the prevailing standard seems to be that of competition, opposition, and domination, as can be seen in television talk shows to verbal wars on social media. It adds that for Christians, hope is a person, and he is Christ, and this hope is tied to community. And since when we speak of Christian hope, we cannot disregard a community that lives the message of Jesus in such a credible way as to give a glimpse of hope that it brings and is capable of communicating that the hope of Christ with deeds and words even today. I think that's so true. I mean, Matthew, I post things on social media with data and facts, and I can't tell you how many punches, you know, I take, you know, and I don't respond
right.
to them, right? I just don't. I'm not going to get into a war. And they punch with name-calling, being demeaning, and no facts or anything to back them up. They're just attacking you because they don't want to hear what you have to say. We've lost this art, and we know, Matthew Bunsen, that, you know, the devil loves division. It's Christ that wants unity. And so I think this theme is so important to go back and to have Christ-centered conversations on these critical issues that are so important to be having. We have to talk about these issues.
Yeah, that's right. And the fact that we've had to invent new words, so to speak, to try to describe what we're seeing, trolling, for example.
Yeah.
That's a word that came into use a few years back, and now it is so commonplace that you are trolled. Trolls are in force in the comments section. But then attached to this, and this is also one of the great risks of this type of movement in the heart, And that is, we've gone from criticizing to trolling. Now we're making actual threats.
Yeah.
And then the idea of cancellation, of canceling people you disagree with. We had, I think, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talking about the need to do something about media, which implies, I don't speak for her, I won't put words in her mouth, but the idea of censorship is the inevitable next step from this.
Yeah.
That in order to end this division and this unpleasantness, we have to take control, which means limiting speech. But the question always comes down to, all right, who are the ones who are limiting it? As we're seeing in places like England and Scotland and Canada and elsewhere, they use this environment in order to impose strict controls of speech. But it's the speech that they disagree with, not the speech that other people want.
Yeah, exactly. So they want to control what you have to say, but not what they have to say. You know, and then they want to say, you're sending out misinformation. Well, what about your misinformation? And we're seeing that what's really troubling about this, Matthew Bunson, is what something Teresa and I talk about all the time, is that we have lost the balance of this coverage because we don't have real journalists anymore. And so we have activists in the media pretending to be journalists, and they have an agenda on one side. And so when you talk about censorship, that's very scary. And that's when you walk down the lines of going to a socialist communist mentality, right? I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But
well, that's right. And it ties back, I think, really to the theme of Pope Francis, that we have to recapture this sense of gentleness, of hope, of calming the heart, of bringing into the public square the hope that only Christ can bring. And that then becomes the norm for behavior. That then also creates the proper, as Pope Francis puts it, the conditions for dialogue.
Amen. We got to go. Sorry, Dr. Matthew Bunson here with us on Catholic Connection. We ran out of time. Vice President of the Editorial Director of EWTN News. God bless. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.